Yeah, it felt great. I didn't get all teary-eyed or nothing, but I did feel a little bit emotion, screaming, just so happy to be a Chicago Bear. So happy to be a part of this team and to be the quarterback captain, be able to help lead these guys to victory. Like I said, we're going to get a lot better over time, myself included, this week coming up.
The Bears.
Ruthie sings. It bodes well for the Caleb Williams album, should one exist. I know Shane and Tanny are dying for it. It's too bad we lost our really, really good singer.
You're right. We would die if there was another one. You're right. Spot on, buddy.
Aw, man.
I got to say, 1-0 without an album? Let's keep it rolling, you know?
1-0 without a parody song?
Yeah.
Whatever, man. Nobody supports my dreams around here. Although you have a good point. Ruthie, if you don't know, I wrote a bunch of parody songs, and me and Danny sang them. It was called The Mitch Album, and the dream was to have eventual liner notes by Mitch Album, but he blew us off. But The Mitch Album for Mitch Trubisky, and it didn't work out well for Mitch. Then we did an album of Justin Fields songs called Justin Fields Forever, and that didn't work out either. So a lot of people have suggested that our albums of parody songs were the problem.
The math adds. The math.
I love you, Justin.
Yeah, this is a problem.
A dog's love is everlasting.
See, that is so out of context. She has no chance to understand anything about that. And it was awful, wasn't it?
Hurt my ears. Bleeding.
Yeah, you're welcome. So yeah, no songs may be the thing to do. I do have a musical idea though for later in the year. I have a musical idea. So everybody, just be holding on to that and make sure you stay tuned in to Score Afternoons. Speaks and Ruthie Polinsky on the Score. Caleb talked today. Matt Eberflus talked today. Let's hear what we thought was the most impactful. Here's Matt Eberflus setting the stage for the C.J. Stroud comparisons that'll happen the rest of the week and how Caleb Williams could possibly bounce back this week and play a little better.
Yeah, I just know, you know, I don't like comparing players because everybody's journey is different. And, you know, everybody moves through that their own way. So it's, again, it matters where you finish up at, you know, at the end of the day. But I will say this, that CJ did have a heck of a year with the yardage and managing the game and the explosive passes. You know, I know he's got some really good guys around him, which is really good to have, with some new additions this year with another receiver and a running back. But excellent year. Again, commend him and the coaches and everybody on that staff.
When you were heading into this game, you said you wanted to see how Caleb would respond to what happened on Sunday and the days coming after.
Sure.
So what has he been like the last couple of days? And where do you want to see that jump from week one to week two?
He's been really good. Since we watched the plays, you know, him and I watched the plays, you know, on Monday morning, he comes into my office and really good there. It's really good, you know, with the players, you know, owning up to everything and, you know, taking responsibility for performance and accountability. That's what you need from leaders on the football team, not just him. And then moving forward to coming in this morning and figuring out what we're doing, how we're doing it, you know, and having conversations with him. And I think that he's in a good spot.
So Flus working closely with Caleb and feeling optimistic about a bounce back and a step forward.
I don't think there's any reason not to feel that way. I think for fans as well.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to trust that first game was his first game.
It was indeed. And he's got a few weeks to get some things dialed in. I'll be looking to see just the same kind of poise that we saw with a step forward in the accuracy. If the accuracy steps forward, I know there's... you know, former friend of the show, I guess still friend of the show, but Chase Daniel did a big breakdown on the Bears offense and on Caleb and was pointing out how the passes that got batted down were headed to the right place, that they were headed to the right target and with the right timing. So maybe there's a couple more completions that don't show up on the ledger, but would have if the passes had gotten through.
I don't know if we'll have this sound about, yeah, we will, because you're the best. But, you know, just Caleb talking about having those throws back today, I think was really insightful.
Well, here's Caleb Williams talking about the missed opportunities in week one and the biggest area of improvement for week number two.
I think it was around six throws that, you know, obviously we would have hit those. Everything would have seemed a lot different. throws that, you know, we hit in practice all the time, on simple routes, on intermediate, and then, you know, the one or two deep balls. You know, if you hit those, the game, everything kind of explodes, and, you know, things would have been said differently about how we played on offense. We're here getting better. Obviously it was week one for us. We came out with the win. We're really excited for that, like I said before. And then, just getting back out here, make sure we're focused on the small things, the details, you know, whether it's myself of footwork drops, things like that, or, whether it's the routes, whether it's the run game, hand placements, all these other things when blocking, to make sure that, you know, as an offense, we're successful.
Does it feel good to get that first game in the NFL out of the way and now to kind of focus on what you saw and now what you...
Yeah, definitely. I, you know, going into that game, it was a little weird for me because it's my first game. We didn't really have anything on the D coordinator. So it was a little weird for me. But when I got out there, you know, I was seeing it well, missed a few passes, obviously. But, you know, going back and watching the film, I was in the right place when I was throwing the ball. Like I said, I had a few also batted balls. But, you know, going to the right places, you know, seeing it well, making some O-line, you know, adjustments and things like that. You know, having good communication on the sideline with my teammates and coaches for adjustments or just, you know, constantly communicating with them. So, I think the process, you know, throughout that game was well, whether it was mental or the small things, you know, on the sideline or, like I said, communicating with everybody. I think, you know, that process was well. So that was encouraging to see. And then so waking up, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday morning, you know, you woke up and you realized that, you know, you won your first game in the NFL regardless of how you felt of your performance. You know, we won the first game and, you know, felt super excited about, you know, not necessarily how I actually performed, but, you know, like I said, being able to come out with that win and being able to help lead these guys to that win. And so, you know, feels good, really excited. You know, it builds confidence when you come out and do that. And, you know, like I said, we're building on the small things, make sure we get the small things down so we can go dominate and have fun doing it. You know, when we get out there in the field as a team, as a collective. So, yes, felt really good.
Caleb, what's
the
you can improve from week one to week two? What do you think it would be?
Yeah, I would say the drops. Sometimes I rush my drop a little bit, you know, not needing to. You know, one specific route that that I can think of is Rome when he was, or I think it was a 10-yard route right over the ball, and I rushed my drop and then you know tried to juice it in there a little bit and missed. You know, I didn't need to. Just trying to help him get the ball to him, getting his hands fast as possible so he can, you know, make magic and do what he does. And so, you know, just making sure, you know, trusting the drop, trusting the reads and things like that, and getting through them. You know, I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that I'm focused on. And then, you know, my finishes on my play fakes or anything like that. Like I've said in many other interviews that, you know, the job is hard. NFL is hard. You know, the defense is going to make it tough on you. So, you know, that's what they're going to do day or week in and week out. So, you know, comparing, you know, that to, you know, myself in his rookie year, you know, typically guys coming in, they have to figure it out and things like that. And so, you know, that's what we're doing right now. You know, I didn't have obviously the performance that I wanted to. So trying to figure it out as fast as possible and, you know, making sure that we're all on the same page, making sure that we're, you know, handling the things that we need to handle. Because like I said, all the small things become a lot larger on game day. And so, you know, make sure we handle those things, myself included, and progress from there. But, you know, speaking on that and getting back to what I was saying about the NFL, the guys in the NFL this week, quarterback wise, you go and watch. It wasn't necessarily week 16 for even the guys that, you know, have been playing ball for 10, 15 plus years. It's, you know, it's always going to be a little rough patch. So understanding that, maintaining your confidence, if not growing it, because obviously, you know, realizing that you can, you know, keep getting better. And so that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing. We're excited about it.
Damn. That kid, man, that kid, that is a That is a smart and polished, composed, and methodical kid who's taken his time to make sure he formulates the thoughts. I know there's some verbal tics in there. There's some ums and there's some you knows and stuff like that. But the dude is buying himself time to make sure that he says what he actually thinks and says it carefully. And listen to the perspective in there about how hard it is and how it's hard for everybody. And now we get a chance. Like, I can be as blown away by him as I want to. And people can be blown away and they can be dismissive of how I might perceive his intellect as he talks about it. The good news is we get a good, solid season. And at the very least, a month. Let's watch. Let's see if there's progress. Week one to week two to three to four. Let's check out these first five games. We're going to get a chance to see it. I'll be very surprised if we don't see serious progress over this first month based on the way this kid thinks about it and works at it.
There was one part of that press conference that really stood out to me. I believe that we undersold the significance of the lack of film on the Titans defense coming into game one. New defensive coordinator, which brought in a mix of guys. He came from Baltimore. He brought in a mix of guys from the Ravens staff as well as the Cleveland Browns staff. There was a mix. First-time play caller, had never called a defense before. Obviously, there's only so much you can take away from preseason film. Caleb Williams had no film to study on that Titans defense and what it was going to look like. And he pointed that out very kind of under his, you know, it was a little comment that he made there. I think he said, you know, we didn't have any film on the Titans defense. So for him to struggle in his first game without any film to study, I mean, let's take a deep breath, everyone.
So who undersold that exactly? All right, I did. I know I undersold that.
You know,
I didn't. I'm just going to point a thumb. Like, I didn't think a lot about the Titans defense, and I joked about it. You were here last week, and I was kind of joking about it. Like, oh boy, I haven't really thought that much about the Titans. What do they do? Well, let's look at that.
Yeah, we had Grody on our show, and he was at Hallis Hall that day, and I asked him, like, how are they game planning? But, like, I just don't think we gave that enough weight. And even in the days following the game, I don't think we really thought about that. There's not a ton of prep for Caleb there other than to just go out there, take care of the football, and do what you can. But the game did feel like it was coming very fast at him, maybe because he had no context of what to look for.
Yeah, and you're talking schematically in terms of calling blitzes, where rushers are coming from, what they're doing to confuse the quarterback in terms of bringing guys up and then dropping them back and all of that.
And I'm not saying that's the only reason he struggled, but it could be a big part of it. And, and the fact that Caleb pointed that out today, I think, is also very significant.
Yeah, it's interesting because he knows that. He knows that he was at a deficit in terms of preparation and film because this is a brand new defense like you're talking about, a blended staff and a first-time DC getting a chance to do it with a weapon in Tavondre Sweat who seems to, he might be a potential game changer in the middle of the line. I mean, this is a guy who is enormous and was thought to be a low motor guy. And like, it's the classic. I mean, we talked about it in this town when the Bears were considering drafting Jalen Carter. Like, do they have somebody that he could play next to? And they end up, Jalen Carter goes to Philly where he plays next to Fletcher Cox and in the same room as Fletcher Cox. So maybe Jeffrey Simmons is the correct OG to be next to Tavondre Sweat to remind him to bust his ass, at least through one game. That might be a weapon that's unleashed that we didn't even really think about.
Right.
At least I didn't.
Right. And I think that could be this said for, Caleb Williams, who obviously is the rookie in this situation. But obviously the offensive line, there were some concerns there as well. Again, just not a ton of resources for them to kind of study and look at what that was going to look like. Obviously, that's just one of many reasons for that I think people were concerned. But
it's a great point.
It's something I think that's very noteworthy. Now, you're going to face the Texans. There's a lot of film on this team, enough.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see if that looks different for Caleb.
And it
and the game maybe slows down a bit for him.
And it should. It should look different. And it should look different for this offense. They've got last year's scheme to think about. They know what D'Amico Ryans likes to do. There are some additions, obviously, on that defense. They've got two serious edges to think about in terms of Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
I'll say this. They could not stop the run. the Texans. Indy ran for 227 yards. They're averaging 6 yards a carry in that win, in that almost win. They almost won that game. Let's be real. Mm. So I think that's something that that the Bears should be looking to exploit and really get their run game cooking in this one, because that'll help Caleb too.
Texters getting at us at 312-644-6767. Okay, Speaks, now that he's won the press conference, please go and play better than Craig Krenzel. Yeah, I mentioned that. Let's watch for the improvements here in the first month, in the first 5 weeks. And there's others getting in here. Going back to how Caleb said he doesn't get nervous, some of the things he describes in the interview and his actions on the field do seem like nerves. Yeah, it's interesting. When he talks about how the drop back was too quick. Mm-hmm. He did that too fast. A couple other. He says he doesn't feel nervous, but maybe his body does react.
Sure, I think it's inevitable, and maybe that's a mental game that he plays with himself. Where I'm telling myself I'm not nervous. It's excitement and, you know, just anxious energy that could still get the best of you, even if you're not describing that as nerves. Mm-hmm. It can still be excitement, and you know your emotions get the best of you in the moment, which. He's a human being. Like, let's let him have that.
Whoa. I don't know. That kind of take. You're not going to get far at the score with that kind of take. Ruthie. Texter says Popo should be one of the new hosts. She's awesome. Great radio voice.
So nice.
But Titans gave Bears the game. So disagrees with you. Enjoys okay. you, but disagrees with you.
But also, I hate listening to myself, like, back. So that's a really nice compliment. I love the texters that hype me up. They aren't always doing that.
But. No, there'll be more. There'll be more. And then there'll be some that just kind of destroy you. And that's just kind of the way it goes. Right. You're used to that.
Sometimes
though.
The spelling here, I'm like, come on.
The spelling of the texters?
The spelling of the texters.
Oh, boy. Now, but that's just Mitch. That's just the boss getting at us with his various thoughts. Texter says, I think we didn't think about the Titans defense until after the fact because we thought Caleb was going to be so good it wouldn't matter. Yeah, you know, I mean, you've got...
I don't think that.
Well, you have some just like blind excitement, some absolute blind excitement about what Caleb was going to bring and what all the weapons were going to allow
for. Oh, you mean for the fans? Yes. For sure. The coaching staff was definitely thinking about the Titans defense. I can, you know, the coaches and the players, they were thinking about what the Titans were going to do. It was just maybe a little bit of a guessing game.
Mm-hmm. Top of the hour, we'll talk to Seth Payne from Sports Radio 610 in Houston about the Texans and get into that a little bit more here on a Turn the Page Wednesday. When we come back, though, check in your ego at the locker room door. One of the underutilized Bears discusses that reality next.
Bears. Cole Komet and the Bears.
Following along with all the news coming out of Halas Hall, and we will bring you tape and news along the way from everybody that matters right here on 670 The Score. And we'll talk some late night West Coast fun on the television a little bit later in the hour. But Ruthie Polinsky, you and me were talking about Cole Komet a little bit in transition with Burnsy and Groats. We were talking about maybe the change up personnel and getting Cole Komet some more snaps. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
I would like to see Cole more involved. I think, obviously, he was a safety net for Justin Fields in a lot of situations, and I would like to see him be that for Kayla Williams. Mm-hmm. Just because of the threat that he brings.
Yeah, and it's led to a lot of people like just, you know, taking little pot shots. Yeah, maybe the local kid who signed the new deal ought to get used more, and it's a lot of stuff starting to happen. You know, it's funny, last week we were like, you know, there's really nothing negative. There's nothing negative to talk about. Now we got some negatives.
Yeah, we do.
Got a win, though, to go with it, which is a nice touch.
That's the best kind of negative, isn't it?
I think so.
Right.
I do think so. Cole Komet was on his new podcast over there on CHGO with our buddy Adam Hoge and was talking about his role and the lack of playing time Sunday when he had fewer snaps than Gerald Everett, among others.
Look, I'll say this. I'm a guy, obviously, I view myself as a top tight end in this league. I think I've shown that over the past couple of seasons. And I feel like I'm at a point in my career now where I can be one of the very best in the league. You know, this is the best I felt. Coming into a camp, this is the best in shape I've been. And, you know, I stand by the stuff that I've been putting on tape throughout the preseason and practice, you know, and even in the game the other day. So, you know, that being said, like, I can only control what I can control. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's kind of how I have to go about it. You know, everyone here has an ego. And I think, you know, I have an ego. You have an ego. you know, everyone's got an ego in our locker room, and it's just about how you manage it. And it's important to always check your ego at the door when you walk in the building. And for me, that's always about doing what's asked of me. And so if it means, hey, you know, Cole, you're only going to be playing 10 to 15 snaps this game. Cole, we need you to play 50 snaps this game. Cole, we need you to play every single snap this game. Cole, we need you to do some special team reps. Like, whatever that is, that's what I got to do for this team. And that's what I'm about as a player. And I don't have to be happy with those decisions. But at the end of the day, I have to take care of my business. And it's important to always check your ego at the door and do what's asked you. And at the end of the day, put good on tape. And I feel like I've been doing that. And, you know, it's week one, and, you know, we got things that we got to work through, but, you know, I'm confident it'll get situated. And, but like I said, I feel good with where I'm at. And at the end of the day, I can only control what I can control.
Yeah. I don't want to make excuses, but I mean, it is fair to point out, you guys have a lot of new weapons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Offense, mm-hmm. Including the tight end room and new offense coordinator and play caller. And so there's got to be some sort of feeling out period on how to use you guys all properly. But yeah, I mean, I'll admit I had questions going back, especially watching the film, being like, you know, a couple things here and there, like, why is this guy in the game? Why is this guy not in the game? I imagine that's just going to be sort of a feeling out process here early on in the season.
Yeah, and we'll fill it out and we'll see where it goes. And like I said, like, it's important for all of us, just because of how many weapons that we do have, is that we have to remind ourselves that this is a team sport, and it's about the team, and it's about doing whatever it takes to go win the game on Sunday. You know, I'm confident in our coaches to put us in the best spot possible, and we'll continue that. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously with the performance we had, it wasn't great offense, but, you know, the positive note of that is it's only up from here.
Man, dude, speaking my language right there, sublimating the ego for the greater good. Easier said than done. Helps when you've been compensated and you've got the contract in your favor, so that ought to help a little bit. But that is exactly the right mindset. I'm not surprised to hear it from him.
The captain, right? Like, this is a guy that is the model Chicago Bear. That's part of the reason why he got the contract, and it's great. I mean, of course, we knew Cole was going to say that, right? It's not really about Cole, you know, it's about the personnel decisions and who's getting put out there on these important moments of the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's so common. It's so easy to fall prey to it. It's so freaking human, you know, like he was talking about, you know, everybody's got that ego. I mean, look, I'm a talk show host. Of course, like we all get it. You're a chatterbox who talked a lot in school and talks a lot now.
I like myself. I like to hear myself talk.
Oh,
I don't like
dig
to go
yourself.
I don't like to go back and listen to myself talk on the radio, but I do like to talk.
Of course you like yourself. You have to. To get out of bed every day, you have to like yourself.
Thank God, right?
Huh?
Yeah.
To get in front of a camera or a microphone, you have to, of course. But like, did you see Saquon Barkley after he scores 3 touchdowns in the Eagles' debut? He was thankful. One of the things he said was, I was thankful for the teammates, like A.J. Brown and another. He said, a lot of time you're in a new place and you start scoring, and they might be like, you know, how about me get one? They were like, yeah, go for 4. Go ahead, go for 4. And he was like, that was really cool. That was really nice to see. It's like,
yeah,
because everybody's worried about that kind of thing. But on this Bears team, man, there's no way. There are not enough targets,
right,
to get all of these people the stats that they might think or might seem that they're worthy of. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And this just kind of sparked into my brain, so I'll bring this up. But I think that's why I'm interested to see Tyler Scott, if he is on the active roster this week, because he was one of the players that Caleb had really great chemistry with in training camp. And it seems a little silly to take that away from him and just at least see if that translates, especially after a game where the offense struggles and maybe if, you know, Rome isn't active and all these things kind of play out.
Yeah, I think we will see Tyler.
Yeah.
I think we will see Tyler. But it's interesting about all these targets.
All these options. Like, yeah. Cole, like, it's this is what we were talking about all offseason. How is everyone going to get the ball? Cole was victim this last week.
Yeah, and somebody's going to be a victim every week. And that's why I was so tuned in. You bring up the money, but the money's a factor in terms of the comfort level of like what people like. DJ Moore's been, you know, he doesn't, and he's got a good personality for it. He's never been one of those wideouts who's a diva who's begging for the ball. It just hasn't been his thing, even when sometimes it should be, which was a topic last year, right? So, but DJ's been paid. Cole's been paid. But of course, they're competitors and they want it. Do you play fantasy football?
So I stopped playing fantasy football a couple years ago. It was when I moved to Miami, I just had too much going on Sundays. Like on game day when I was covering a game, it stressed me out because I just was responsible for too much on that day. So I didn't want to be worried about my fantasy team because I'm too competitive I didn't like to lose on my fantasy team. So I was like, let me just focus on my job and I'll just listen to other people talk about fantasy.
So you're actually covering a game and working on a game.
Correct.
It was getting in the way of that.
Correct.
I get you.
It was just a little bit of a distraction.
Like, because you were rooting for some things that you shouldn't be rooting for, or just because it was more on your plate?
It was just more on my plate and I didn't want to lose in fantasy that week.
Okay.
But I'd like forget because I had like to switch my lineups and stuff because I was like busy.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Working.
That's the when you forget and the games have begun.
It's even fun.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's some of those pumpkin patch days on a Sunday morning when you're like, oh, God, oh, it's noon. Bears don't play till the late game. I forgot to come on.
Right.
And you're screwed. But the reason I bring it up is because the range where, like, Bears got picked was just bizarre. Is DJ Moore your number one wideout? Is Keenan Allen your number one wideout? How high do you take Kmet? Do you even consider Gerald Everett? Probably not. But if you're not, I mean, but where you take Kmet is based on how many freaking the opportunities there are.
Sure.
There are a lot of people in fantasy football who had Khalil Herbert on a roster. Dude got four snaps. Played four snaps.
Crazy.
You know, so I mean, maybe they weren't active, but I saw some people who drafted Roschon Johnson. Guy was inactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like nobody knew exactly how this is going to play out. So then the understandable freak out after week one, let's see, man. That's going to shift as we go here, depending on the usage.
100%. And I, like you said, I think it's going to be different every week, every game plan. And that's a huge competitive advantage for the Bears because it's going to be really hard for their opponents to figure out who's going to get the ball this week. Yeah. There are just too many options.
Matt Eberflus today was talking about Cole Kmet not being targeted that much. And here was his explanation.
Matt, what's your concern? Get four snaps in the game? Was that just kind of an oversight? Was that part of the plan?
Yeah,
him only less than 50%. So
yes, oversight, not part of the plan. I don't know about all that. I would say that it's situationally. You know, there's we had 11 personnel where he was in, and then when G was in, so it was the way the rotation happened. You know, certainly, do we want to get Cole involved in the game plan more in terms of catches and, you know, point of attack blocking and all those things? Yes, we do. But again, we're looking for a formula for success on offense. And again, that's going to take a little bit of time in terms of distributing the ball to the skill more evenly. And we're working to do that this week.
All right. So the 11 personnel is one tight end.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're 11 personnel, sometimes that was Cole, sometimes that was Everett. I think they're going to use 12 personnel more this weekend, don't you? They're going to use two tight ends more, especially because the edge rushers we were talking about with the Texans.
And I think that's what was so confusing because the offensive line was having such an issue on Sunday. Get another tight end in there and block. So I think that was and also, isn't that been the conversation about Shane Waldron's offense?
That he used the 12.
Two tight end system.
Absolutely.
That's all. It's Shane Waldron, two tight end system, two tight end system. Mm-hmm. Like, here we go. Like, let's go.
No, that's absolutely
true. The time is now.
What was interesting is that, the issues were on the interior of the offensive line. So maybe they didn't think to go to the 12 personnel and use those tight ends on the outside.
Anyone, come block. Please.
You know, Waldron and the Seahawks, they used 12 personnel a lot in Seattle. He often used to run 13 personnel with three tight ends. So he would do that a fair amount. So this is a run-heavy offensive coordinator usually with a bunch of tight ends, and we did not see that very often.
Let's get Big Dog in there.
I'm serious, man.
Big Dog.
You love that guy as much as we do?
Oh, I love that man.
Tell us why. Mercedes Lewis. Tell us why.
Big Dog. I mean, come on. Actually, now that I think about it, there's actually a deeper emotional connection to me for that nickname because when I was little, the nurse in the operating room or the delivery room when I was born gave me a stuffed animal dog that I carried with me around forever, and I called it Big Dog. And then when I was started walking, I was dragging this dog around with me everywhere. So my mom got me the same version of the stuffed animal in a smaller version. So I had Big Dog and Little Dog. Oh. I lost, and then I would like bring Little Dog with me when we would travel and things, and Little Dog got taken up in the sheets by housekeeping when we were at Disney World when I was like 7.
Oh my God.
Devastating. But so I still have Big Dog. I still have Big Doggy.
What do you,
Big Doggy, good?
So tomorrow,
we're bringing Big Dog.
Can you bring Big Dog in tomorrow?
Yeah, remind me, I'll bring him.
Oh,
he's in the guest room. God. I don't sleep with him anymore. I have a husband now.
Husband, did your parents tell you that Little Dog went out to the farm?
What?
like that they put Little Dog down? Like, did you know that?
No, I knew what happened. I was old enough to know.
Okay.
It's a little embarrassing probably that I was traveling with a stuffed animal at the age I was.
How old were you?
I don't know.
15.
I should ask my mom. No, I literally might have been like 12.
Oh, I thought you said you were 7 when it got swept up in the sheets.
No.
Let me ask my mom.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Please
How
do.
Old were we when I lost Little Doggy?
Yeah, when Little Doggy got swept up in the sheets at Disney World.
But I always had, I was in peace with it because it was Disney World. Like,
that's a good
way to
go.
He was having a great time.
That's what I'm saying. That's a really good way
to
go.
Yeah, I found peace quickly.
If you are Little Dog, I mean, put yourself in the body of Little Dog. Getting swept away in the sheets at Disney World. I mean, then there's probably a washer and a dryer, like maybe a tumble dry. That might have been exciting for Little Dog.
I'm sure he's probably still is having a great time.
Some cleaning person might have taken Little Dog home.
Oh, maybe another Little Ruthie is enjoying Little Doggy.
This has been Little Dog fan fiction.
I'll bring Big Dog.
All right. Psych.
Anyways, I love Mercedes Lewis. I think he's a great, you know, addition to what the Bears are trying to build here.
And let's see him some more. So if you bring in Big Dog tomorrow, then maybe we'll see more of Big Dog on Sunday.
Flus's reaction to Big Dog's touchdown last year was a moment that I think we saw like a real glimmer of Matt Eberflus that we hadn't seen in a while. Like, he was so jubilant and happy in that moment. And we're like, okay, because we're used to seeing when he's up in front of a microphone, it was, you know, I'm doing a job. This is a part of my job I don't really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to see what the players love about him when Big Dog scored that touchdown. And like to see him, remember, wasn't that moment?
That was awesome.
With the two arms up.
Absolutely
Big
awesome.
Dog.
When you see somebody who works that selflessly get his moment like that.
Yeah.
No, it was very, very good stuff. It's Spiegs and Ruthie Polinsky on the score. The kid of the moment is stealing focus. And deservedly so. That's next on the Score Afternoon Show.
Payoff pitch. High fly ball out towards right center field. Pete Crow Armstrong at the wall. Jumps.
Wow.
And he made the catch. Oh, baby. Pete Crow Armstrong steals a homer from Max Muncy. And that is how this one comes to an end.
Book Shami was into it last night, several different times during the game. Fun and satisfying baseball has been available of late watching the Chicago Cubs play. And I know it's terribly timed as they're now 4 out with 17 to play. And they had those 2 awful months that essentially buried their season. But my God, if you're willing to invest, last night was pretty damn great. It speaks in Ruthie Polinsky. You had big-time matchups with Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Shota Imanaga and then Seiya Suzuki and Shohei Ohtani. I think it was only, the third time ever you had 4 Japanese players? And Yamamoto, ridiculous stuff. That splitter that's going low and away from hitters and his curveball. And then all the great defensive plays. A double play started by Michael Busch on a ground ball bullet from Ohtani with 2 men on and nobody out. And the Cubs with that 5-run inning. Our guy Nico Horner, who we talked to yesterday, with a huge line drive double in that 8th inning for an insurance run. But it ended up all being about Pete Crow Armstrong, the Sherman Oaks kid from 7-8 miles away from Dodger Stadium.
It was unbelievable. I mean, those are the moments in baseball that are just get out of your seat, scream, you know, he brings the excitement and the juice that he plays with is so fun to get on board with.
Yeah, that's the swagger and the confidence that he plays with is awesome, especially when he can back it up. And he's been backing it up lately with offense and with defense. Like, the second of the 3 real good catches, the one where he and Cody Bellinger had like a little miscommunication for a minute.
And he slid.
The first one he slid. I guess he slid on the second one too, but he has kind of a late reach out and a backhand there. And they were like, what happened there? Cody Bellinger being deferential. That is a Gold Glove center fielder. or actually I guess he's a Gold Glove right fielder, but a really damn good center fielder in Cody Bellinger, who is allowing Pete Crow Armstrong to get whatever balls he wants to because he knows that Pete's that good.
Yeah, and to have the respect of your teammates in those moments, I think is that next step, right, for PCA. Like, to have that and to feel the kind of energy around what he brings to the game and to the defense, I think is really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of people around the league are talking about him. A lot of people are talking about him and what he can possibly be. And you can crunch it down with numbers like Bernsie did earlier today and what war he will be, what he projects at, and what the defensive numbers say. And there's a lot of different ways you can look at the defense. But you also just know from, you know, years or decades of watching baseball, the value of a drop-dead killer Gold Glove center fielder who basically can't be caught on the bases as a stolen base threat, who's also learning to hit
right.
and slug. You know what it is to have that guy that you can plug in, what that means for, you know, building a team. It means a hell of a lot.
And it energizes everyone around you. It's just really fun to see players that are making their teammates better, too. And I think that's such a huge part of being a great player in baseball.
We wanted to let everybody know that with the help of all of you, the amazing audience here at 670 The Score, and in partnership with the Chicago Cubs, $1 million was raised for cancer research as part of the Cubs for a Cure weekend. The Radiothon alone here at 670 The Score generated close to $600,000. And 100% of that will be donated to BrainUp. You can go to brainup.org, BrainUp for Cancer Research. It was a really amazing event, a tremendous weekend at Wrigley Field. Very proud to have played the part in it that we did, and very, very cool to be involved in such things.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're against cancer. We've taken the controversial stance here.
What about you, Ruthie?
Cancer sucks. Cancer sucks.
She fits right in.
I got to say, I was on the fence about the whole thing. Didn't know which way to go, but then we did the radiothon. I was like, you know what? Firmly against.
After Danny told me how to feel about cancer, I really solidified my opinion.
It was good that he reminded us
yes.
that it was bad.
I mean, guys, clearly you don't want cancer. We don't want anyone to have cancer. I don't want it.
Yeah. Well, you need, yeah. No, I was about to say you need some people to have it because you got to talk to those people. But no, you really don't want anybody to have it.
Come on, man. I don't want cancer.
Nobody does. Nobody does. It was a very, very cool event. By the way, so here are some of the ways in which Ruthie Polinsky is fitting in. One, she's not afraid to sing. She's not afraid to sing on the microphone about the Bears, which she did earlier today. Good stuff out of her.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for doing it.
The Bears.
There it is. That was delightful. Two, she's against cancer. She's firmly anti-cancer.
Firmly.
So that fits in nicely. She really enjoys herself. She really enjoys herself and is not afraid to say it. I mean, there was a very nice, clean moment where she said, I like myself. And she also, she asked the texters to say nice things about her. Did you guys catch that?
I did not.
Yeah, you did. Didn't you? How would you describe what you said at that point?
I think I just was thanking the texters that said the nice things.
Yeah.
And welcomed anyone else who wanted to say nice things about me. But I didn't say, please send nice texts about me.
No, you did it more craftily than that.
But to be clear, you then made fun of their grammar, which they love. So I don't know.
Bad spelling on here. Bad spelling.
Yeah, here's a couple. You know, I really like this lady. She sounds like she knows what she's talking about.
Hey.
I think you guys could use somebody like that on the afternoon show. And her voice is so much better than Parkins. LOL. Here's another. Ruthie, you're doing an amazing job. Hope to hear you on The Score often. So nice. Yeah, no, good job.
Thank you.
Right? I mean, so that's fitting right in. You ask for support, you get it, you sing, you're anti-cancer.
That's, yeah. There are a lot of things. Yeah. Guys and Dolls?
That's right. We haven't even gone down the Guys and Dolls route, which I think
we
is
could.
Fine.
One day.
Yeah, one day. One day we will.
Maybe a different show.
The musical?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to go down that route. Okay. It's bear season.
What do you guys get to decide? You get to decide things?
Literally no offense to you guys and your interest, but like I'm trying to
what
look
about
out for
damn
our numbers.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of offense.
Absolutely
you don't think we beat Wojo by talking about Sumi and Adelaide's Lament?
No.
All right. Noted.
Luck be a lady tonight.
There she goes. She's off and running. Let's check in Houston on a Turn the Page Wednesday next on The Score.